Welcome into a special podcast. It's our very first edition of this, and I am joined by the one and only head football coach for the UNC Bears, Ed Lamb. We're calling this Football 52. And coach, thank you so much for doing this. This is going to be fun. We're going to do this every week. You and I are going to sit down kind of in a long-form podcast conversation, talk about what's going on in the program, talk about the positives, the hurdles, things like that, just updates, and probably a bunch of stuff in between, too.
Well, thanks. I'm really excited about the chance to do this, and it's been, maybe 6 or 8 weeks that discussing the opportunity. And, you know, I initially was kind of like, well, I don't know if I want to do a podcast. Like, am I supposed to know things? Am I supposed to, you know?
Hey, I've been getting away with that for a while.
I mean, that's kind of my job all day is to know the things, right? And some of that's kind of like almost becomes a shtick. You know, I got 110 players and 10 football staffers and then, you know, dozens of other support staffers. And it's kind of like I'm doing the directing all day. And I enjoy that, but also, you know, this opportunity to maybe talk through some things, think through some things. What can I learn by, preparing for this on a weekly basis? And I don't exactly know how much preparation it's going to take. I think it's just an idea of, okay, what are we doing each week and how can I kind of share that, document it, and learn from the process of that?
Yeah, and I think that now especially it's so important. And one of the reasons I think you and I started having these conversations about doing a podcast like this is – opening up kind of a window to the program for a lot of people that are looking in here. Because, you know, in this area in Greeley, folks just want to see this football program. They want to see it. They want to see it thrive. They want to see that success come back. Before I was up here, you know, in those late 90s, it was such a crazy time. And then obviously that transition to Division I on the FCS side of things has been interesting for the community. And I think just opening that window up for people to see what it is you're doing on a weekly basis, the new struggles that are out there, because we do live in a completely different world in college sports. So when you become a college coach or you take a different job in this last, 4 or 5 year window when things have really changed, it presents a whole new set of things that you're dealing with on a daily basis. So I think letting people in on that will be really interesting too.
Public perception is a huge part of this business. We all understand it in the business. And I'm anxious to open those windows to give people an inside look at what we're dealing with. You talk about the history of UNC football, and it's a proud history. And I've gotten to know a lot of those alumni from that era. And absolutely, the entire goal, the objective is to get back to that type of success, to be nationally relevant. And yet the challenges are much different than they were in the 90s at the Division II level.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
I commend all the folks who made the decision to strive and take UNC to the Division I level, and now there's a new set of challenges, and they're not barriers; they're just challenges, and we can get through them.
Well, and you knew that coming into this too, what it was going to look like. Obviously, you have a lot of experience, head coach with Southern Utah, your experience with BYU, and being able to bring that over here was, I think, really appealing. And really exciting for a lot of people in the area. So I think just outlining those things as you're progressing, because that first year, coach, before we get into kind of our topic today, that first year, no matter what level you were coaching, no matter how much experience you have or success, that first year with the different program, you're getting to know everything. You're getting to know the community. You're getting to know the school. You're getting to know, I mean, directions. I'm still learning that, and I've been here since 2005. So just those little things. Plus, you said 110 players, 10 staffers, so many people you're managing on a daily basis. That first year, is it pretty much just jump into the deep end and you're doggy paddling, hoping you can survive at the end of the day?
Yeah, it is. And I would say it's a spectrum, right? I have my convictions and, you know, the people that I worked for when I was a little younger in the business, a lot of those are borrowed convictions from them. And then when I had an opportunity to put everything into play at Southern Utah, what a tremendous learning opportunity for all of us that came through there. And I've got a bunch of those guys that played and coached for me on this staff at UNC. We know the direction. We know the road that we're going, and we're convicted about it. And our first year results are, you know, completely disappointing, but not entirely unexpected, especially with, the idea that when we came in, we made a promise to the university, we made a promise to the players that we were not going to come in and clean house like is kind of the fashion right now for a first-year coach. We took all the players that were on the roster and we said, you're our guys now. And at that point, you know, everybody's kind of on a day-to-day tryout basis and a year-to-year tryout basis. And we've had some significant roster turnover, which I think is a net plus for us going into year two. But yeah, those obstacles that I talked about earlier, they're not all clear. They're not all in the daylight when I take the job. And so while we have some conviction certainly about the direction that we're going, there's also things that pop up every day like, oh, okay, this is a little more of a challenge in this area than we thought it might be.
Yeah, and as we progress too, we'll be able to get into more details. I mean, you know, in the next couple of months, we can start learning about this roster more too. And that's one of the things that I think is going to be so interesting about this, because most people, including me, who's in the sports media industry, I don't know a lot about these guys. You might know a handful. You know, you might know, okay, who's going to be the quarterback? Who's going to be that star defensive player? But being able to go through the depth chart and pick your brain about how you're building that depth chart, I think it's just a fascinating process. And every week there's something. I mean, when they say there's no offseason, Coach, how real is that? You're constantly working. You're constantly doing stuff.
Absolutely. It's just different seasons. And it's one of the things I love about the business, and most coaches that I talk to about it, it's one of the things that they love. Occasionally you'll read something on ESPN or something like that where a guy says, I'm done with college football. I'm done with the recruiting. I'm done with the NIL. I'm done with, you know, babysitting kids or whatever. Mm. I want to be around professionals. Our seasonal job in college football goes from the rigors of recruiting, and then as we move towards spring, obviously spring practice, transcending throughout that whole winter, spring time is building up the team physically. And so the training sessions, which is something that probably one of the things I geek out on the most. Like if I were to, you know, not be a football coach, maybe I would have been a strength coach. And I'm not, you know, you look at me, I'm kind of a long, lean guy. I'm not one of these jacked up guys for anybody listening. You know, I'm not trying to overstate my
weight room stuff. You're in good shape. You're not Dan Campbell, but you're in good shape. I mean, but hardly, very few are Dan Campbell, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no question about it. So, and then we go from spring practice into summer training and summer conditioning, and that's a lot of fun. And then we move into the football season, and that's just a completely different animal.
So it's February 6th as we're recording this. We'll get this out probably later today, and then we'll have this available for you. These will be archived and saved, so you can go back and listen to different episodes, and then we'll try to churn one of these out every single week where we can update. So where are you right now on February 6th? What's the goal when you're getting up in the morning? What stage of football building are we in right now for UNC?
We've been at it for about exactly a month now since the guys came back from their holiday break and the new semester started. And we jumped right into it with physical training. And the priority right now is mass, size, strength. We're not doing a whole lot of running. We're doing enough movement out on the field just to keep the guys limber. But we're not really, you know, we don't want to sacrifice some of those hard-earned calories. We want to get the guys as big and as strong as they can possibly be, according to their position goals, of course. And then simultaneously, we're bringing in a recruiting class. The first signing date is December 20th. We were really pleased with the results of that first signing date. I think we ended up with a total of 13 signees, 12 of them from the state of Colorado, which is that's our stated objective in recruiting. We want to win the trust of the Colorado high school football coaches. We want to establish pipelines, which is not, you know, sometimes I think maybe fans or even coaches that I've seen and worked with, they consider kind of the pipeline is, oh, if you drop your standards and you get a kid from this great high school, then next year you'll get another one that's maybe better. We're not doing that. What I think is just remembering back to my own days when, you know, when I was a freshman and a sophomore and a junior at my high school, the seniors were those guys I looked up to. And anywhere that they might have gone on and played, to me, was a great place to go. And so I think that's more how we're trying to establish that pipeline, is just earn the trust over a series of years, see this program and these players develop individually, reap the rewards of that.
Coach, why is it so for years I've been doing, you know, my show for a very long time, and I follow the area as far as college football. And I've always thought, man, to me that's – and I make it sound a lot easier, but it's a no-brainer to recruit locally, to get local guys. Now, again, you got to be careful with that. You're not just going out there just because you're from Colorado. You're coming to play football for us. It is a long process, and you're doing the same things recruiting them that you would kids out of the state. But and I don't have numbers in front of me or anything, but we've looked at that over the years where it's maybe four guys, it's five guys. To me, it just seems like what you, 12 out of 13, is that right? Is it 12 out of 13 guys?
Yes.
That seems like the first goal, like get as many Colorado guys in. Obviously, first and foremost, are they going to fit your program? Are they going to line up athletically, mentally, and working toward that common goal? But then the other thing is you're building in a following as well. I mean, I can't tell you how many local parents will email us when there's news that a football guy is going to UNC or volleyball or whatever that's local, that's on the prep scene, and they want to follow that kid. And you're building that up. So there's so many positives to really honing in locally.
Absolutely. And really, the coaching world is pretty divided right now at two large ends of the spectrum where, you know, you have some guys that are player development guys. And that's how I came up. The most pivotal mentor I had in that is not just when I was working for Jim Harbaugh, but the guys that were on that staff. We had a ton of NFL guys on that staff. David Shaw was on the staff. Mm. Dave Adolph was on that staff. Johnny Morton, these guys were, I mean, they really taught me not just a lot about football, but about player development. And so I think as a coach, you have confidence in player development, or you have, you know, your stated objective is to go out and get the highest rated guys. And, you know, that's always, to me, been a little bit of the wrong idea when building a college football program is that you're going to go out and recruit somebody just because he has a certain number of stars, or you try to get your recruiting class ranking up. But the only thing that really fans can relate to, and so I understand the pressure, fans can relate to those recruiting stars. It's not as if they're jumping on and pulling up high school prospects video and saying, yeah, I can see the development potential in this guy. They just simply want to say, look, our class was rated such and such. And to me, that type of roster doesn't build a regional cohesiveness. That type of roster doesn't come with a lot of gratitude. That type of roster is not going to put in the same type of work ethic. And look, people are being successful with a lot of different philosophies. I know we're going to be successful here. I know exactly how we're going to do it. Player development doesn't happen overnight, but over the course of several years, it's magical.
I want to learn, too, about that player development, because I would imagine when you're recruiting a guy and when you're getting close to getting that guy to commit, you're not just looking at what he's doing right now. You're looking at, okay, how much room is there for this guy to grow? And that's not just the physical side. You know, mentally, is there a lot of room for this guy to grow as a leader with our program? But I got to ask this, and maybe this is a sidetrack. When this starts for you, because like you said, a lot of people can, maybe they can dig up highlights of a kid. A lot of times kids are putting them up on social media now, and it's just their highlights. And I always joke on my show, well, obviously, you're going to put your highlights out there. Those are all going to be your best plays. When you're starting out recruiting a guy, what is that first step? I mean, are guys reach? You have your guys that are looking out. You have your pipelines and everything. But when do guys start to get on your radar? Where do we start here? I've always been fascinated by that.
The recruiting start is done especially at UNC because of our philosophy, and then just I think in FCS in general. I don't think that you can rely at this level on what's out there on the internet. So, you know, the 247 or Rivals, like that's not how you start with your list, or even the subscription services that you may not have heard of and fans wouldn't have heard of. But we have, you know, you can order these, you can order the state of Colorado for like $1,200, and they've done these mailers to the high school coaches in the state, and you get an idea of what type of prospects are out there. For us, I really believe in the FaceTime. We step in every school in this state in the highest three classifications. We call at least every coach in this state at least once a year, usually much more than that. We want to know who the development potential guys are in their program, and we have to describe it that way. Look, we're not necessarily looking for your best high school football player. That might be a 5'10 linebacker. There's not a lot of upside there. There's some great 5'10 linebackers that are as good as they're ever going to be. And maybe that's good enough, and maybe that's good enough for the NFL. But we set out with a certain standard of, okay, what will this player look like in 3 to 4 years with the type of pressure that we're going to put on him?
So you are really relying on those head coaches and the coaching staff too. I mean, as far as those high school teams to not only tell you, hey, yeah, we got 3 or 4 studs on this team, but you're also digging a little deeper saying, okay, maybe that guy, who knows, maybe he's a 3-star, maybe he's a 4-star. We're looking at guys that are not labeled as those stars, but could be, you know, potentially they come back and it's like, wow, that guy should have been because he's progressed so much. So you're really relying when you make those phone calls. And that's why having such a good relationship with with the high schools and the coaching staff is got to be one of the most important things.
Yeah, I just followed it. Your question reminds me of a story just this last week. I called a high school football coach. I was a little bit nervous that our offer to one of his players, that he maybe thought our evaluation wasn't on point. And so I called him and I just said, you know, I don't want to give the name because it kind of exposed the player. But I called this coach and said, Coach, I just want you to know where we're coming from with this. I know you have a few high school football players that are better. I know you have a few of this guy's teammates that are better high school football players than he is. But his height, his speed, his athleticism, his upside, I think is big. And that's what we're investing in. And we think that he's a guy that can respond to the pressure that we're going to put on him. We think he's going to be a really good player down the road. And there was about 5 seconds of silence, and the coach goes, "You're exactly right."
Wow!
And he said, and he's coached college football before, and so he was just like, you know, looking at it from that perspective, I know exactly where you're coming from, and so at that point we had another 20-minute conversation about, okay, Coach, can you do me a favor when he's coming and talking to you over the next few weeks, and he's excited about college football, can you set the table for us? We need him to come in here and outwork everybody else to reach that potential. That's kind of, I think, a microcosm of the recruiting that we do and we believe is going to take us to the next level at UNC. I don't think at UNC we're going to win a lot of recruiting battles, at least with schools our size, schools in our conference, et cetera. How do we find the better player? It's probably going to be looking out 2-3 years in the future.
Well, and there's so many different things that you're competing with. I mean, even in the area, you talk about what's going on in Boulder, a completely different philosophy, what's happening right there. We'll see how that works out. CSU's probably somewhere, maybe in the middle. I don't even know if that's fair to say, because Boulder's its own beast. CU's its own beast right now. But then you look in the Big Sky Conference, and there's a lot of programs, their facilities, as you've seen all of these for years, their facilities are absolutely insane. Some kids really value that. Some value the relationship. Some look at you as a coach and a staff and the training group of how can they build me up to be the best whatever I'm going to be, because a lot of these guys aren't going pro, so they're also looking at how am I going to grow as a human being in the next 4 years or whatever that looks like, whatever that timeline looks like.
That's right. And the vast majority, we've done studies on this in the past. There's some good studies out there. You can probably Google them. But we've also done our own studies on just, okay, player decision criteria. Why did you choose this school? And we've done it at different places that I've been. And it really is about facilities, winning tradition. And in those ways, UNC is not up to par with our conference. And yet, that's not something that I can address. That's not something that our players can address. And I believe there's even an advantage to having an attitude of gratitude within our program. And so the player maybe that's not making a decision between Montana State and UNC, that's the one that we want. We want the player who's making a decision between UNC and maybe a Division II program. But he's got our measurables. He's got the GPA that we're going for. GPA is always an evidence to me of work ethic and a response to authority, right? And so I think, we can be at the level of Big Sky champions. It's just not going to be done in the way that any other school in our conference might get there.
Is your job, being at UNC, being in the Big Sky Conference, you just said it, you're also looking at those D2 players. I mean, how difficult is that? I was just on the show yesterday. I was talking about Steve Smiley finding a guy like St. Thomas who's had an interesting road. You always hear stories. Basketball seems like you hear a little more. Maybe it's easier there. But you hear stories of D2 guys, and then they just excel. They make it to that level. How difficult, though, is it to find those guys? And then once they get here, maybe they – wow, Coach Lamb discovered this gem, or the staff discovered this gem. Well, now how do you keep that guy? So there's so many interesting hurdles to get over. It's got to make that job just a little more difficult.
Well, it does, and I think that's just where conviction comes into play and experience. This is going to be a completely different challenge than SUU, right? And so I hate to reference back to that experience.
Sure.
Over and over and over. But to see the success that we had there with unrecruited players — by unrecruited, I mean nobody else was interested in them. They had one offer and a long list of guys that played in the NFL, the first draft choices in history. We sent 3 guys in 1 year to the NFL Combine from a defense that we had in SUU in 2015. Most Power 5 schools don't get two kids wow. in the NFL Combine every year, right? Like this was just kind of a shock to not just the big sky, but, you know, NFL scouts around the country. The way that we recruited and developed for future potential. And the other very similar circumstance to when I took over at Southern Utah, you know, Utah State had a head coach that was I had done most of his career in Texas, and he really believed in the Texas recruit. And Texas has fantastic high school football. There's no question. And then Weber State University was also – they had a coach from the South, Jody Sears, at that time was the head coach mm-hmm. there. And so the state of Utah was largely under-recruited. I believe that Colorado right now is largely under-recruited. So it's the perfect time for a school like UNC to come in and really say, look at all the success these Division II programs in Colorado have had. These are really good football programs regardless of division, and they're doing it with Colorado kids. We can take a lot of those kids at UNC.
Well, and again, I go back to the fan aspect of that. You know, being in this area, that's what a lot of these folks want. They want to hear those names. Whenever you hear a name, a local guy goes on to a school in Colorado, and especially if that next level. I mean, there's a couple of stories where they're Colorado college guys. Or high school guys in Colorado. They're Colorado college guys, and then there is that rare point where they actually ended up playing for the Broncos, you have yeah. those names. People want to at least have the base of that story and follow along. You and I talked about that Chargers running back Austin Ekeler in Eaton, Colorado. I used to broadcast games at that point. I was doing color, and I was amazed how good he was. And I was actually shocked that he didn't end up playing at the next level. And I would or at this level with UNC. Yeah. And I would imagine those are the kind of guys, too. Look at that dude. That dude was not getting recruited heavily by Wyoming, Colorado, Colorado State, and then ultimately not UNC at that time. It was so many years ago. Those are the kind of guys. There's proof right there that if they get that shot, who knows? And look what happened to him. He gets, to a smaller college and grows, and by the time he's in the NFL, he's not hitting his ceiling yet, but he has grown into this phenomenal player that he wasn't when recruits were first talking to him.
And these are the stories as coaches that we all have them. And we want to minimize those, right? Like, if we can maximize the great stories, the ones that we recruited that nobody else was interested in. But yeah, the reality on Ekeler, right? Like, hey, Colorado missed on that one. This is now one of the top players in the NFL, right? So not just UNC. Let's not blame the coaches at UNC at a level, but like Colorado, Colorado State, Wyoming. Like you said, everybody should have been all over that guy in hindsight. But in circles that I've worked, I heard stories about. When Steve Mariucci didn't think that Aaron Rodgers was good enough to play at Cal. There's a ton of those stories that we all have, and those are misses. Recruiting is not an exact science. It's just really, okay, how do we maximize the odds in our favor? And for us in particular, and I think what you're getting at is, okay, now the closer these guys are to UNC, the more we scrutinize it and we make sure that we minimize the chances of having a story like that happen.
Well, again, I think that goes back to how we started the conversation of having those chats with those coaches. You're already building that foundation. And then when you're out, whatever that process looks like, seeing them at games, when you're building those evaluations and you're seeing them at games or what have you, that's where it's so important to cover all your bases in that area. And again, I don't know what that process was when a guy like Ekeler was in high school. I wasn't there. But being able to chat with those coaches and chat with the community and learn so much about that guy to see what that potential looks like has to be now more important than ever.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the critical first step, because especially when you talk about player development, there just has to be a character makeup that's ingrained in the player or at least something that you can tap into. And there's nobody that can speak to that with more intelligence than the high school football coach that's there working with him every day.
Coach, one of the things we want to get into on this one too, I want to talk about this. We'll kind of title these and that'll be the theme. And you're coming up with these, of course, the comfort crisis. And I want to get into what that means to you. But let's talk about culture first. Culture is a hot button word. You heard at the beginning of the season last year, down in Boulder, again, to reference, and I'm just thinking of different stories. Coach Prime says, culture doesn't really mean anything to me. We've talked about that on the show. What is culture? How do you build that? Is culture not just getting good players and that, okay, yeah, they ride along with your philosophy? Some coaches will say, no, it's much deeper than that. What does culture mean to you?
Well, it's absolutely culture for a player development coach. And I don't know how many of us there are out there anymore. Hmm. But I'm living and dying by it. I'm staking my job on it. I'm doubling down on it, right? And so culture for me is so critical to player development. It's the way these guys not only work when they're in the facility for 2 to 4 hours a day, but it's what they're doing outside of the facility to also prepare to be the best they can during that 2 to 4 hours. And it takes a lot off the field, including things like just keeping your social life in balance, keeping your spiritual life in balance, taking care of academics so you're bringing less stress to the environment, in addition to the things that everybody would think of like sleep, nutrition, et cetera. The comfort crisis that you asked about, that's a book by Michael Easter. And what I did this offseason was just put some real thought into, okay, where did we come up short last year, particularly in culture, which is, you know, that's my baby. That's the thing I really want to push. That's the thing that I believe is number one to success. And if we didn't have success, then I got to look at myself first. And so you just was doing some thinking and some reading. You know, John Wooden's Pyramid of Success is marvelous, right? And so I started at the top of that because the issue – I've been studying that for years, and I couldn't draw it up for you from memory right now, right? But I can draw up the top part, and that competitive greatness is the very top of that pyramid. And then that's supported by poise and confidence. And I think anyone who's been in sports can just understand how poise and confidence in those vital moments is how you win. And so I just started with that and introduced that to the players. There's some stuff further down the pyramid that's – even the language is a little antiquated. You know, things like industriousness, like, wow, okay, I got to teach the guy. That's a really cool word, and it's got some great concepts in it. But let's start with something a little smaller, at least on this first introduction. And then so I really felt like, you know, one of the things that we've talked about from day one and goes back to my time at Southern Utah as a head coach, the idea of always striving to be smarter, tougher, and better conditioned. And so I put that underneath the, you know, the poise and confidence. And then I think a book that just came out a few years ago, and I think it's a bestseller, and so I'm not probably this is nothing revelatory, but The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter, I think, does a really good job of explaining how to become smarter, tougher, and better conditioned. Basic idea of the book, humans have been here for 2.5 million years. Only in the last 100 years or so do we have things like reliable indoor heating, air conditioning, you know, the comforts of modern technology, right, of the industrial world. But our bodies have evolved for eons on being cold and uncomfortable, right, and hungry, and how we strive and become better in those moments, better people, healthier, more productive. And kind of each chapter of this book does a really good job of explaining the science behind some of these ideas. I think instantly when you hear it, you're like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But what about the science behind it? And so one of the things that we dive into early in the book is this Japanese idea of misogi, which is a physical test designed to fail at a 50% rate. And I mean, that's pretty powerful when you look at, can you design a test where we are going to fail at a 50% rate? Okay, the type of anxiety you have in preparation for that, the type of elation you have when you get through something like that, and maybe the resetting of goals when you don't make it. And so we've been having these Saturday morning workouts with the players. It's kind of designed, okay, let's get that same type of nervousness on a Friday night that you'd have in the fall during a game, right? And we've been having these workouts on Saturday morning. The first one we had and designed, we had 71, you know, healthy guys that could fully participate in an unmodified fashion, and 30 of them passed the test. And so I think we were right in line with this idea of misogi that the comfort crisis talks about.
What's the name of this other test? I mean, is this the hill? Is this what we're talking
about? Yeah, I referenced that about a week ago when we were talking. Our strength coach's name is Tyler Hill. And we used to call this I used to be really into CrossFit when I was coaching at Southern Utah. And so we did some of this. It certainly wasn't the basis of our training, but in terms of these competitive Saturday environments, we did a lot of CrossFit-type workouts. One of my favorite workouts at that time was one called Fran. And the best time that I had got at that time at Fran was 3:16. And me and the strength coach were talking back then and like, hey, I wonder if we could kind of do a play on John 3:16, like, you know, football salvation through Fran, through the workout Fran. Well, You know, we had to modify it a little bit because, you know, in hindsight, all those guys that came through Southern Utah, I've got some shoulder issues from all those kipping pull-ups that we used to do back in the day. So we could, we, you know, we've learned that we could be a little smarter maybe with some of our movements, at least from, you know, for football players, it maybe wasn't the exact way to do it. But these are the, that's the type of workout that we're going for, is a strength, speed, fitness, toughness test all in one. And we've decided to call that each successive one that we do, these are hill workouts or hill 316, as in climbing the hill.
How important is it to these guys too? Because you talk about it, it's February 6th, and when you're getting into that, you got a long way to go until the season. When you give them something where these are real goals that you're shooting for, and obviously there's going to be stuff in the weight room, whatever, where you're honoring those guys too. How big, how excited do these guys get? Probably nervous too, as you mentioned, but these are competitive. If you're playing at this level, you are an ultra competitor.
Well, when you talk about a roster of 100, right? Yeah, they're certainly they were all competitors at one time, and then some guys kind of find their way out of that, like they're not in the same role that maybe they're used to, and so how do they deal with that? And some of them, you know, at least in their early years, may shy away from that idea. I think this brings out the best in everybody, particularly when we add motivational tactics to it. Like the guys found out after we did the first one that, hey, all the gear. And players love gear, right? The hoodies, the shoes, the shorts, everything that goes along with it, the sweatsuits. So the 30 guys that passed on that first Saturday, they got a new hoodie. You know, they got a new sweatsuit. And then the guys that passed the second Hill 316 the second week, they got a new pair of shoes. And so we actually still have about 20 guys that haven't passed the first test yet, and we're a month in, and they don't have any gear. But the other guys that have progressed all the way through the first three workouts and passed, they've got three new sets of gear, right? And so eventually everybody will. Like, you know, the guys need to wear the Bear uniform with pride, and eventually we'll get everybody there. But then just a week ago, I also notified the team, hey, you're not doing spring ball depth chart. I had heard some rumors of like, well, this is just weight room. Wait till you see me on the field. The players are kind of talking to each other like that. I said, you're not getting on the field if you can't have this minimum level of fitness. Oh, and by the way, I've told you before, I do all the workouts that the players do.
Yeah, I love that.
I'll be 50 years old next month, and I've passed the test, right? So this is not like that type of workout where we're not going to have, you know, a significant portion of our team participating in spring ball. If they want to get on the depth chart, they got to pass these tests.
Well, I think, again, and I love the reward system too, because in this day and age, 2024, kids do a lot of the video game stuff, upgrades. You know, that's what they're doing in their whatever spare time or something like that, where it's like, hey, I'm shooting for a goal. Now I got, oh, a new hoodie, new cleats, new shoes, whatever. And you're capitalizing on that, because we are in that upgrade kind of society where I'm earning it, I'm getting it, and now I can show it off and wear that with pride. On the workout side of things, I always thought that was a cool story, because you don't hear that all the time with coaches. You hear sometimes coaches will do an extra run with them. There's some coaches you look at and go, there's no way that guy's running with anybody. But you, that was a big thing that I thought was so exciting right off the bat, and a lot of your players said the same thing, was when you said, hey, if I'm asking you to do it, I'm going to be doing it too. How much does that impact these guys when they see that? When they see that you're not just barking out orders, telling them to do these things. You're doing them too.
I'll take you back to the original, the moment when I decided to do that was my first meeting at Southern Utah. And I explained to the players, hey, we're going to be the hardest working team in America. And at that time I said, look, guys, I know there's really no way for us to be sure about that other than in our own hearts and our own minds. And as I was explaining this, like this tremendous work ethic, this kind of like almost human torture look was in their eyes, like, oh, serious? What does that exactly mean? Like, how hard are we going to work? And I just said it at that point, like off the cuff, hey, by the way, everything you're doing, I'm going to do too. I'm right there with you. You can watch me sweat. You can watch me fail. I'm going to drop a squat. You know, in the weight room culture, like drop a squat means like, you got more weight on the bar than you can do, and you fall down into the rack, and it's embarrassing, and it's, you know, it's not a place that any weightlifter or athlete wants to be. But it's critical, like, where are our limits? That's the idea. And so for these guys to see me on a daily basis finding my limit, pushing through it, showing up day after day, working through injuries, the idea of not getting sick, right? I got this from Coach Harbaugh. Maybe you've seen him, but his kind of shtick was always, I've never been sick a day in my life, you know. And then I think a month or two ago, you saw him with the speech where he said, you know, the I'm the wall that viruses bash against and die.
Some of the best quotes ever.
Yeah, it's 50 push-ups and an apple cures anything, that kind of thing. Well, we've got to model that for our players. And if I'm not right there with them in the weight room, to me, at this level with what we're trying to accomplish, I think there's a tremendous advantage to me being right there next to the boys.
I love a lot of the Harbaugh-isms too. Wasn't it several years ago, he used to not like chicken. He's like, I'm out on chicken. Yeah. I don't want anything to do with
chicken.
Timid
animal.
Yeah. And then then he's like, well, I like chicken now because I raised chicken. So I control that. I control those chicken. He is some of the best stuff. Yeah. I mean, some of the best quotes out there.
Yeah, I loved working for him every day. It was a new adventure. The energy that he brings on a daily basis. I raise horses, I raise chickens. So I was pleased to see that he changed his mind on chickens. It's not my favorite meat to eat, but no. I do love harvesting the eggs and to see that the output that those chickens make on very little cost. That's big time.
Yeah, and I think those kind of things, though, obviously you see what you're building and what you've built in the past. You see Harbaugh. You see the love. He's out there with no shirt on running around doing crazy things. And then you can see players. You can see it in their faces when you see these videos. They get excited about that stuff. It's not to say that every coach that's successful is like that, is about player development and really pushing hard on that culture. They can still be successful, but you're in this area where you're trying to find – what it is that's going to change this culture. And I think owning that and really defining that is such an important thing. And it sounds like early on, what you guys are going to be about is, hey, we're going to work. We're going to work extremely hard. Now, it's easy for people to say that. But when we're getting into the details of just how hard these guys are going, how hard you're going, you can start to see, okay, we are building a culture here.
That's exactly right. And it really comes down to following through. And so, yeah, there's some blind spots when a coach comes in and says, hey, all these guys that are currently here, these are my guys. I mean, I don't know parents. I don't know backgrounds. I don't know these players. I don't know what makes them tick. And we suffered the consequences of that a year ago. Things have changed drastically. I know not only the players that we've brought in and their parents and what they stand for, but I know our players better now. I know what buttons to push. I know what their goals in this sport are. And that it only happens organically. You can't really put out a survey.
Yeah.
If you put out a survey or just bring guys in for 15-minute increments, one right after another, get a lot of stock answers. And guys aren't going through adversity. But over the course of this last 12 months, I've really found out who guys are. And the idea that, as I said to the players last Friday, we have Friday night meetings once a week right now during this time of year where we're just building culture and talking about the state of the program and what needs to be better and what we're doing well, et cetera. And I said to the guys, hey, we're not leaving our success this year up to the week. We're going to make sure that we are first the strongest, biggest, most physical team in the Big Sky. Now, if we can win on top of that, that's even better. But that's going to be number one. So if that doesn't sound right to any of you, if that's not motivating, because I know there's some guys right now, I can see your legs shaking. I can see your eyes are wide. You're with me. You're excited about this. You think it gives you a chance. For those of you that are not motivated, either change or the portal is your friend.
Mm. Well, and I think that makes sense. When you want to get that out right off the bat, you got to figure that out. Because we always hear you win in the weight room. You're going to win in the weight room. You're winning in the offseason when you're doing those things. It's easy to say that stuff, but when you get the right guys that buy into that, that's when you know. And then maybe the guys that haven't quite bought into that yet are seeing the leaders do that as well. They're seeing their coaches out there doing stuff, and it does change that mindset where you can change at this. I mean, this is a very interesting age for these young men.
That's right.
I mean, there's a lot of changing that can happen, hopefully for the most part for the better as you progress. But you talk about 110 student athletes, football players. When you're meeting with these guys, like, what does that look like for you? How often are you doing one-on-one meetings? Can you even do that? Is there enough time in the week to sit down with that? Not just talk about the workouts, but you're preaching on that culture, on your philosophy too. What is that process like?
Well, to me, it's organic when it's done best, at least with my personality.
So you're not doing like a, hey, we're sitting down, you're coming in this time, you're coming in this time. It's going to be organic.
Yeah, I think that's best. Obviously, there are times when there are acute issues. A player struggling in some area of his life, I'm aware of that, or one of my coaches are aware of that, make me aware of it, and boom, it's like, hey, let's go have a visit. Need to have a visit with you today. I reach out by text or grab them in the weight room, say, hey, after lift, let's go over and visit. And and that type of moment is important. But it's also the unscripted moments at a team activity. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we played knockout with the whole team. You know, got a line of 100 guys.
Stuff, man.
We did some dodgeball.
Well, it was probably an 8-hour game of knockout.
Yeah. It did take a while. Not quite. It might have been 20 minutes, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it was a long one.
It was a long game of knockout. The guys were really sweating and enjoying it. And sometimes it's that, you know, it's getting knocked out of knockout and standing against the wall with a guy and just kind of reaching out and saying, what's going on in this area of your life or something, or sitting next to a guy on the bus on one of the bus rides or at one of the team meals. I think that's where really the magic happens in terms of getting to know guys, what they really represent. It's not something they've prepared for. We all know what it's like to go into the boss's office on a meeting that's scripted. And you're, okay, I've got this meeting at this time. You're thinking about it all day, right? And so that's not exactly the relationship that I'm trying to have with guys. I don't think that's where the real potential lies. I think the potential lies in getting to know them in casual, spontaneous, organic moments.
You talked about, you know, the other things too mentally. Talking to them about doing the right things, you know, whether that's doing a little extra workout. Maybe I'm not going out and doing silly things all the time. Faith-based. I know you bring that up. I know that's important to you as well. How important is that kind of thing? Because that's another part that's got to be very difficult. Because like we talked about, this is a very interesting age for these guys. And they're going to college. And there's a lot of distractions in Greeley alone. But we're not that far from hangouts in Denver, up in Fort Collins, all over the place. Getting distracted, social media, whatever that looks like. How much of an emphasis do you put on those kind of things now when you're talking to your guys? Even if it's not an individual meeting, but it's more of a, hey, we're just talking to you as a team right now, making sure you know, hey, be thinking about doing the right things every day.
You know, a huge priority for us right now. It's been a major cultural issue for a long time at UNC. And I've learned about this. This is one of the things that I was not aware of. Now, marijuana, alcohol, you know, you name the drug or the vice, it's a problem everywhere. And you know, I worked at BYU. There's guys struggling with it there. And some people think that that's kind of a panacea place where there's nobody struggling with alcohol or drugs. Like these are young guys at developmental stage in their life. They're trying to find out who they are. And it was a major problem here that I was not aware of the level of the problem. And so I started to figure that out, had some players that I was getting to know during the course of the season, during the course of our struggles. Some of them started to kind of hint or outwardly kind of point to it. And so I really began to attack it. And the hardest part at that point was I started to get some kickback from some of the players, like, hey, this is my right to do this. I'm 21, or this is legal in Colorado, stuff like that. And I had to remind the team as a whole team, look, if I want to kick you off this team for wearing a red shirt in the weight room, I can do that. We're going to do this my way. And hopefully it's our way eventually, because I'm going to be very open about, if you don't like the things I say, again, the portal is your friend. That's not something I could say from day one or month one. Like, the portal is your friend has become something that I've really started to talk to these players about. Like, if I don't inspire you in the things I say, there's a better place for you. The portal is your friend. Obviously, if I come in here saying that from the first meeting or the first month or really through the first season, that's not the way to build trust, right? But at this point now, I know these players. I know their ambitions. I know their parents in many cases. And I know whose parents didn't send them here to be a party guy. I know whose parents sent them here to get a degree, to learn some things about themselves, to be the best football player they can. And, you know, that to me is my purpose as a coach. Like, how good can we get at the things that we care about? And it doesn't just have to be football, but all the things that you care about, all the things that make up you, that's what gets me up early in the morning. No matter how awesome you are, how can I make you a little more awesome?
Well, and we're in this world too, where there's so many motivational, because I watch it. You get on social media, you're scrolling and you're seeing motivational guys really step up and say, hey, to achieve those goals, you can't be doing a lot of this stuff. Do you use a lot of, like, any outward motivational people or videos or anything like that to push that point? Because again, I think that's got to be tough. You get a 21-year-old that's like, hey, yeah, I'm going to play football, I'm going to lift weights, I'm going to do all those things, but I want to go out and do this, I want to go out and do this. But when they see, not if you want to get to this level. If you want to get to this level, you have to dedicate yourself a little bit more. There's going to be time at some point to do that. But this is a – you worked hard for it, but it is an honor to be playing football or any sport really still at this stage when there's so many others that don't get that opportunity or they screwed up that opportunity.
Well, I commend you on your social media algorithms, right? Because the thing that I've found out about social media is, you know, you attract what attracts you. And,
yeah.
and so you can find people out there saying anything, you know, that sure. ayahuasca
yeah.
is the key to being a great athlete and to being successful in the life. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know everything. I don't pretend to know everything. I just know the way I want this team to be shaped, and it's going to be clean. It's going to be drug-free. These are going to be well-balanced individuals. That's really what I'm pushing for. One of the things that we have – so Friday, at the Friday meeting I referenced, we're doing that on Friday night. We start with kind of a, okay, where's the team at in terms of who's doing some things really well on and off campus? Who needs to pick it up? Kind of a public – appeal to pride and a public appeal to shame for those who need it and are going to be motivated by it in those moments. And then, okay, culturally, like, you know, what's the next thing? Maybe I'll read a passage from the Comfort Crisis and talk about how that kind of pertains to what we're doing. And then but the whole meeting itself is called The Last Word because I bring in a guest speaker every Friday to have the last word.
Yeah.
And we've had everybody – so Ben Cort came a few weeks ago. He's the author of Weed Incorporated, and you know, he's on the National Football Players Association, NFLPA board for the drug testing policy and the drug policy in general. He's worked with almost every major sport. Really did a really nice job with the players, a down-to-earth kind of straightforward, okay, not just marijuana, but alcohol, drugs. Ask me any questions you want. I'll give you the lowdown. Do these enhance or do these detract from your performance? He did a great job. I've had several alums come in from different eras of UNC football. And my guideline to them, because it always comes out when I invite them to speak to the team, it's like, hey, coach, what do you want me to say? Hey, don't worry about it. You say whatever's in your heart, but one thing that always plays well is, what do you wish you knew when you were their age, right? You've sat in these chairs. You've gone through these rigors. You know what it's like to be a college football player. Now you're off running a successful business or your successful father, husband, et cetera. You know, what are the things that have led you to where you are? And those have been really special for our players. I've gotten great feedback from the guys on just, coach, appreciate you bringing that guy in. That taught me a lot.
There's so many of those. And I love the outreach side of it, too, where you are bringing back those former players or people that were involved with UNC at one point. I think that can be so powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I just, you know, I need as many recommendations. Almost every time I meet a guy, I'm like, hey, who would want to come back and do this? And so I think there are plenty of great players who are successful now in life. And we can do this for years and years, and I wouldn't run out of players. I'm almost, you know, embarrassed that there's probably some great candidates out there to come speak to the team that I haven't even met yet or I haven't even reached out to about this opportunity, but we're just going to continue to do it. We've got this up until spring practice. We've got that pretty much full with speakers already booked and really excited about what they have brought to us and what these guys will bring to us.
I think, Coach, this podcast is going to be a lot of fun for me just to learn more about, again, those words, those when you hear culture, when you hear win in the weight room, when you hear we're going to work hard and all that stuff. Yeah, I want to get into that stuff. Like, I want to learn what that really means to you, because some coaches just say it or players will just say it. And you don't really see – you don't get – a lot of these fans out there don't get to see what that actually means to people. So I really commend you for coming in here and wanting to do this every single week. I think this is going to be a lot of fun, and we'll have kind of different topics. We'll probably go into the weeds a lot on things, I'm sure. We'll talk about personal stuff, talk about different sports, I'm sure, but we're going to kind of have a focus. And I thought, you know, this first one, kind of going into that culture side of it, was really important to do that.
It's fantastic for me. Like I said, the ability to shape a little bit of public perception, perhaps the chance to, you know, I was an English major, and at one time, you know, journaling was an important part of my growth process. Well, I've become too busy for it. Chosen not to do this. Can maybe this have the potential to mark a record of, you know, particularly the circumstances. You know, not only is it tough to win at UNC, but we didn't win a game. Okay, mm-hmm. So who wants to come on and listen to the coach of a team that didn't win a game? Well, let's see when we turn this around. Does this kind of become a journal of the things that we thought through, the things that we discussed, the things that we implemented, and did that lead to a success? I think that can be a special story. I'm really excited about the prospect of that.
I am too. And that's stuff that's, you know, I went to UNC two different stints, ended up going back at an older age because I didn't, because my story was I went to UNC. And then I realized there was a radio program at Ames Community College. So I went to Ames, got the job, and started working at KFK, moving up. And then my wife comes to me at the age of 30 and says, hey, before we have a child, what do you think about – you only need like 30 credits. So I go back. So that was a completely different style for me. But it was really neat for me because then you're even closer to UNC. You're going there more. You see the athletes all the time. I mean, I interview these guys all the time. I get the opportunity to interview coaches on a daily basis. So I want this area to grow and not just wins and losses, but where people are caring about these programs. They're getting excited about them and we're doing fun things with it. And I think that, again, going back to culture, going back to documenting these things, that's what these people really want. They want to learn more. They want to get to know these guys more. And you've been off to a great start on the community aspect of it. The 0-11 thing's interesting to me too, and not to give any excuses as we wrap up, but you guys were so close in a lot of those games. And I know, like, you guys don't want to hear that. Maybe you do, but the fact that you said, hey, we have a lot of things that we need to fix. We got to do that. But the fact that you were competitive in a lot of those games is interesting to me, and that gives me a lot of hope, even without just talking to you in these podcasts.
Yeah, our players are well aware of that. I think it was four or five games by a single score, and the number of times we were leading in the fourth quarter and just weren't able to close it out. And hey, we all, like, my hand is deep in that in some of those disasters. Obviously when things don't work out, was there a different play call? Was there a different motivational tactic? Was there a different player to put in that key point in the game? There's always a better way to do things, and that's hard on me and hard on the team. They're all looking at themselves. Incredibly frustrating year that I believe is fuel for what we're trying to accomplish going forward. So we're going to make the best of the disappointments from a year ago. I think there is a little bit of encouragement in the fact that some of those games against the very top teams in the country were so close and we were right there giving them all they can handle.
Yeah. Well, I'm honored, Coach, to be able to do this with you too, because I love this. I mean, I'm right there with you. I want this to kind of be that journal for you, for this program, and I'm happy to be a part of it because I think this is where it starts. And again, I'm honored to be able to do this with you because I got to pinch myself. I got a Division I coach that wants to come into this studio and talk football with me or talk philosophy with me. I love it. I absolutely love it. My first time interviewing, I believe it was Coach Dalton. When I was at UNC, I was working for the Mirror. I was terrified. I mean, I go in there and there's all these players. Reed Dowdy was playing for UNC at that point. So, I mean, I get to interview him and I think I asked, like, what's your favorite color? Yeah. I don't know what I asked. I blacked out. But at that point, it was like, I want to do this on a daily basis. I want to have deep conversations. And these conversations, 53 minutes in, I know you got to go. These are the deep conversations that I think is part of this industry that is growing, these podcast conversations. So I appreciate your willingness to want to do this every single week.
Yeah, likewise, I'm grateful for your professionalism and your willingness to do this, to take this on, to think about, to ponder about, and be able to be prepared with some prompts that'll take us into some areas that maybe I didn't foresee. I'm not trying to prepare for every minute of this program. I've got a job that's my first priority, but I can tell you that in terms of this start right here, I've absolutely loved it, kind of learning as we speak, realizing some things and thinking through things maybe in a little different lens than I might the rest of the day.
Yeah, you're so close to it. And then you get a guy like me. I just say a lot of different things, Coach. My wife will tell you. I'll take her off in different areas that she didn't even know existed. So that's what's going to be fun for me here. Last one. Let's do this. I'm not going to talk to you until after the Super Bowl. Do you have a pick? Because I haven't made mine yet, and I'm gathering research from people.
Let me start with a little bit of cop out and say low-scoring game, the Niners win.
Low-scoring game?
Low-scoring
okay.
game, the Niners win, yeah. And that's my first inclination. So I'm going to stick with a low-scoring game as somebody who grew up in the Bay Area when the Raiders were in L.A., right? So like my dad, he's a Raiders fan, but he, most of his experience is Oakland Raiders. And then, but during my formative years of high school, when I started playing football, the Raiders were in LA at that time. So San Francisco was the team for Northern California kids. And of course, they were really successful during that 80s, 90s period when I was growing up. So I am a Niners fan, full disclosure on that. I think if the game's high scoring, Kansas City does win. So I'll be pulling for a low scoring game and the Niners win.
I hope it's a good game. That's when I don't have a team, when I don't have a dog in the fight, and I haven't had a dog in the fight in a while. I just hope it's one of those great games. Comes down to a, you know, a last kind of stop or a crazy drive. Brock Purdy puts his name up there with greatness, goes down and leads a drive, or something crazy happens. That's what I'm rooting for.
You know, as soon as it turns into a blowout, in my experience, the food doesn't taste good anymore. The conversation dies down. It's just kind of like the party's over as soon as it gets to like a 3-4 score lead. So, yeah, let's go for a nice close game. Good conversation, good food all the way through, maybe even a game decided in the final minute.
Maybe the commercials are okay too. I don't know. We're doing a poll question today. What's your fit? Because there's a lot of people. I'm the game guy. I don't care about the party. I don't care about halftime, the commercials or whatever. But I have a poll question I do every week around this time of year. What's your favorite part of the Super Bowl? And the food's the big one. Because, you know, if you don't have a dog in the fight, which you do, but there's a lot of people that, if I don't have a dog in the fight, you got to find other things to motivate you, and maybe that's nachos.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I love that. I love that. But, you know, one of the things that wasn't available many years ago was like the All-22 film. And I don't know if you've ever watched a game like that. But a lot of the games now have the alternate channels where you can get what we as coaches call the All-22.
That's, pretty cool.
And that's always just so frustrating to me. If I'm sitting down watching a game, not as a fan, but just to see a close game, to see a competitive football game, I get so frustrated with the fact that you can't see the defensive backs.
Yeah.
You can't see the wide receivers running down the field. And, you know, anybody that I'm watching the game with casually, they don't know what I'm talking about, right? They're like, oh, you can see the ball right here. You know, that's what you watch is the ball.
That was the most frustrating thing for me growing up, because I was a Broncos diehard. I was a real Broncos diehard really back in the day. But my favorite position in football is cornerbacks. So I love to watch the cornerbacks, and I like to see how they're guarding a guy. You can see how the play develops, you know, because a lot of people go, oh, he blew coverage. Well, no, actually, maybe he thought the safety was coming over to help, whatever. You don't get to see that very often, but with that All-22, I do love that aspect of it. It does make it interesting.
Yeah, it changes completely. And I'm not saying that every game that I watch is, you know, that I'm watching it as a professional. Usually when I'm watching a game, when I can afford to do that from a time standpoint, I'm just relaxing and enjoying it with whoever I'm watching with. But in some cases, I really like seeing that All-22, and I think I'll watch it as a fan because I'm a Niner fan.
What's your favorite sport outside of football?
Well, you know, personally, I'm getting at that age where like all I have left is golf. You know,
I wish I could say that I could enjoy golf, but it's just so bad.
I didn't say I was good enough to enjoy it. I have a high threshold for
pain.
Yeah, it can be a painful game for me, but I have enough breakthroughs where I do really enjoy it. And then, you know, I enjoy watching the international soccer.
Okay,
yeah. Now, right. Not so much like a Premier League guy or some of those. Like it's great, and I love the game of soccer. I grew up playing more of that than football. But the, you know, the international pageantry and that kind of representing your country that you really don't get in American football, that's something that I'm drawn to.
I'm just trying to get a couple of things here. So when I bring things up, I know an area that I can bring you, you know, and we'll be able to talk about that as we go. So this is going to be a lot of fun, Coach. I know you got to get rolling, but this is a blast. I think this is something new for me. I mean, I've done a couple of these, but not on a regular basis. And when I do my show, it's fast paced. It's quick. You don't get to dive into a lot of the meat of this. So I'm excited to get to know you more, get to know this program more, get to know more about what it takes to be a coach at this level. It's something guys like me always we think about. You know, we think about putting headphones on or headsets on and calling plays, but you don't think about everything that goes into what it takes to be a head coach, especially at the college level, with all these interesting things popping up. It almost seems on the daily in the NCAA. So
you might have a 30-second story here that kind of illustrates what you're talking about. When I was down at Southern Utah, we have these crazy windstorms down there, and I had a cinder block wall that a section of it blew over in one of these crazy windstorms. Just wasn't reinforced well enough, and this was at some point in the late spring or summer or something like that. And so I was out there, you know, fixing this wall myself, right? And I like to do things. In my opinion, everything's kind of figure outable. Now, my wife would tell you that section of the wall is pretty whimsical.
Yeah.
And she didn't like the fact that I did it myself. But I rebuilt it myself, and somebody came walking by and recognized me, and like not somebody that I knew really well, and he didn't know me, but he's like, "Hey, coach, how's it going? This is great. Is this what you do in the off season?" Like he didn't understand that was my house and I was working on my wall. He thought that college football coaches, you know, had a you just show up on Saturday and then you have another job doing something else.
That.
And I think that's a great kind of, you know, illustration of what you're saying, like the idea that, hey, no, we work at this thing 52 weeks a year. We put in incredibly long hours. There's a lot of passion, a lot of dedication to be able to enlighten that aspect of it is going to be a powerful thing.
Football 52. There's a reason we're calling it that. Yeah. I got just one side story for me, too. My father-in-law, he didn't grow up loving football. I think I've forced them all to watch games all the time. We visit with them. They live 10 minutes away from us. And he's one of those guys, which I'm sure you hear this all the time. Why don't the running backs run to the outside? Why don't they get to the outside? Right. So now I give them enough crap on it where if they run it to the outside and they lose yards, I'll look at him. He's like, yeah, I don't know. They should have ran it to the inside. You probably get that stuff all the time. Coach, did you consider calling a timeout there at this point? Or maybe you should have kicked a field goal. Well, you got to love those guys.
It's just – it's the thing that doesn't work. It's so easy to point to that thing. You know, Weird Al Yankovic has it's a great – it's called it's called something like every post-game press conference, every coach. And both the way he does the media and the way he does the coach is so spot on. And you just hear that, like, announcers on television, some of them bother me so bad because, you know, if you get under center on a short yardage play and don't get it, they say, everybody knew it was coming. The guy was in shotgun all game and then he goes under center. If you stay in shotgun and don't get it, the announcer says, I would never take a shotgun snap in that situation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you blitz and don't get home and you get a completion on third and long, they say you shouldn't have blitzed. If you can't blitz this quarterback, he's too good. If you don't blitz, they say you got to pressure that guy. You know, you can't give him time. And they just roast the coaches
and
there's no way around it because the thing that, you know, like in Weird Al's skit, hey, coach, I think one of the media says something like, hey, coach, why didn't you do the thing that would have worked? The thing that I would have done.
I might start texting you that after the game, coach. The last one, too, I was watching a college basketball game, and the broadcaster said, you know, they've got a certain team, I think it's San Diego State, they got a big guy who's just a stud. And it's like, you got to feed it to him. Get that entry-level pass. Get it going. And I'm watching the defense, and I'm going, they can't. They're cutting off all the lanes. If they pass it to him, he's going to be stuck out on the free throw line extended, and he's not going to be able to do anything with it. And then, of course, they it's not like the coach is saying, hey, let's not do the thing that got us here.
Right.
Let's not give it to our best player. They're trying. Yeah. They're just cutting off all the passing lanes. So those are fun. We'll have some fun with that stuff, too.
Well, thank you for seeing the game with a little bit more breadth.
And
maybe we can sometimes come in and defend ourselves. But like you said earlier, this is kind of an open book, open window, look into the program, and hopefully I can be vulnerable and talk about, you know, where we're coming up short, where we have came up short, because that's a big part of my growth.
Yeah. Well, same here with what I'm doing with this. You know, I've always wanted to do these kind of programs, so this will be a lot of fun. Coach Lamb, Football 52, we're going to be doing this every single week. For now, we're putting it through the channel of the whole show, so you'll be able to download these via Apple, Spotify, whatever it is you use. As we grow this thing here, we'll be developing its own page and all that stuff at 1310kfk.com. So let's grow this thing. Let's have a lot of fun doing it, Coach. I appreciate you, my friend.
Couldn't be more excited about it. Thank you.
All right, Coach. There we go. Football 52 for all podcasts. Check out 1310kfk.com, Spotify, Apple, and so much more.